It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here live and lively this morning, another beautiful Saturday. Just keep them coming, even if it's warm. It's beautiful out there. So lots to talk about this week. Seem to say that every week, and every week I seem to mean it. But a lot going on out there. Some of it in the market, some of it maybe leading the market a little, and other things are just interesting. So we will be spending the next hour doing that. For the regulars, welcome back. We depend on you all the time. And for the new people, however you found us, by accident or on purpose, try to stick around for the whole hour. And we always tell people they will learn something in the course of that time, and I don't think we disappoint people, rarely if ever. So we will talk about anything that we want to talk about for the next hour, unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, at which time I'll put you on the air and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. So if you want to control the programming, it's just that easy. Well, the things are heating up in the world of finance as influenced by politics. And the market is reacting some days not. But the one thing you heard out of us for the last couple of weeks was expect a lot of summer volatility. We're not disappointing you.
No, but it honestly has nothing to do with politics.
Very, very little, I think.
No, it's much more driven by what is the Fed going to do. I guess you could call that politics, but not really.
No, well,
it's on the verge of
politics. If he really makes all independent decisions, but I think some of them are not quite independent.
I mean,
but it's still the Fed action.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything out of Powell that's led me to believe that he is driven by what Biden wants. I haven't seen that.
Oh, we'll know more this week.
But there's really, with Biden dropping out, there's really no.
Yeah, there's nothing.
There's nothing there anymore. So,
but it looks right now, probably more so than it has for a while, it looks like they might be able to pull off the soft landing in the economy.
I mean, I've thought that for quite a while. It seems like the narrative shifted over the last month to maybe not, and then maybe it's back now. It's hard to say. It's really never happened before that I remember. So,
what's their track record? Oh, for how many?
Yeah, not good. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But the one thing, if you look at history, the Fed always reacts too late. Mm-hmm. And he does have an opportunity specifically in September to potentially preempt a crash landing with a rate cut. And maybe that's what will happen. I don't know.
Well, their motto is too little, too late.
Yeah, exactly. And then overshoot when you're trying to catch up and cause further problems. So, yeah, it'll be interesting that we can say. But we did predict some volatility, and that sure came true this week. It was a really wild week. The NASDAQ saw several hundred-point moves in both direction in one day. It was crazy. It was going positive to negative to positive to negative, and that was just on Wednesday. So it really just crazy. I make the case that, well, it's not really fun to go through that type of reversal after a long period where we saw the market do nothing but go up, and it was all driven by one part of the market, that this is actually a way healthier market than what we were in before. Now, the other one sure felt a lot better because everyone was making money, our account balances were at all-time highs, and they're not anymore. But the reality is they're not that far off either. So this is actually way healthier. We're seeing a lot of underbought sectors that are now being bought and a lot of overbought sectors that are now being sold, and that's exactly what's supposed to happen. So I'm not happy that we're not at an all-time high, but I'm also not that disappointed to see this kind of action taking place right now. And it honestly is following a very seasonal pattern where you see the market go up in the first half of the year and then flat over the summer, down in the fall, up in the winter.
And no one cares about August. They just all go away.
Yeah, but that's true.
Without a bunch of people around, you're not going to get much volume. Without the volume, it just kind of randomly floats around. I wouldn't expect anything to look like a pattern until midway through September or so. They all come back, put the kids in school, and decide they're going to have to go to work.
Yep, maybe do some trading.
Yep.
So the Dow managed another gain this week. It actually had it was the 650-point gain on Friday that really put it into the black. All three indexes climbed more than 1% on Friday, but it wasn't quite enough to pull the S&P or the NASDAQ out of the red. The Dow was up 0.7%, while the S&P fell 0.8%, and the NASDAQ lost 2.1%. For the quarter, things really aren't that bad, with the Dow up 3.8%, the S&P almost dead flat, and the NASDAQ down 2.1%. That's not as bad as it feels right now, for sure. To put things in perspective, the Dow is up 7.7% for the year, the S&P is up 14.5%, and the NASDAQ is up 15.6%. So even if you're having a bad July, you're probably still pretty far up for the year.
Ride it from here for a while before anything bad happens, hopefully.
No doubt about it. Technology's getting all the headlines for a rough patch, but it actually wasn't the worst performing sector of the S&P this week. That distinction goes to consumer discretionary, which was down over 3%, while technology dropped only 2%. Communication services also dropped 2%. On the winning side were healthcare, financials, and utilities, all up over 1%. Industrials and materials were both up just under 1% as well. So there was some pretty positive parts of the S&P this week. The biggest gains in this week were small and mid-cap stocks. Small-cap value stocks were up 2.76%, narrowly edging out small-cap growth stocks for the lead at 2.71%. So really good week to be in small caps again.
Yeah, they've been feeling kind of unloved lately.
Dividend stocks also did well, gaining 1.8%. And then the S&P Equal Weight Index was up 0.5% this week. So once again, paid to own the equal weight over the traditional S&P index. International stocks, kind of a mixed bag. Although the world index was down 0.6%, India, Germany, and the UK all gained more than 1%, while Mexico had another horrible week, losing 3.7%. China and Japan were both down more than 2%. Commodities, not good this week. Pretty ugly there, actually. Losing 1.5%. Silver just really took it on the chin. Dropped more than 5%. Well, natural gas dropped another 4.5%. Fixed income was mostly up this week, with interest rates dropping slightly ahead of the anticipated rate cut. Last, we're into earnings season. 376 stocks have reported. So far, 74% of companies have beat on earnings and 59% have beat on revenue. Less companies are raising their guidance than has been the norm over the last few years, but that brings it back down into a long-term average. So
yeah, it makes the surprises look a little better, too.
That's true. That can help the market, actually.
Right.
And that's all I had.
Yeah, there was a couple of interesting things. Meta, formerly Facebook, is up 4,315% since it debuted on the market in 2012.
Okay.
During that time, the SPY, the S&P 500 tracking index, is up 314. So it's up 4,001% more than the market. Now, that is a lot of growth. All right, we'll be right back after a short break. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And as usual, we have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. I have so many choices today. I was trying to think what would be a good one for now. But the one I keep coming back to is about people who leave a job and do something or nothing with their 401ks. In fact, in 2015, the last year that we have data, 28% of savers who roll over their 401k accounts to IRAs, as we usually suggest they do, left the balance uninvested for 7 years.
7 years?
They sat in the 28% sat in the money market for 7 years. And you know what that was returning in that era. Absolutely nothing. What was the total loss per year of all those people that we would call it an opportunity cost in our business.
You're looking at it for a dollar figure?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's a large one.
Yeah.
Aggregate. Wow. Can you believe that? You roll it over. Who gave you the gumption to roll it over and forgot to tell you to put it somewhere?
Well, that's
nuts.
I would guess that that's people doing it on their own.
It's kind of, yeah. But it's part of the opposite, though. When you go into one of those automatic enrollment plans, they have changed the default to that to a target date type fund.
That matches your age.
It's not going to help the doing it in reverse when it comes out of there into the IRAs. But, my God, somebody's got to get hold of these people. Well, that's unacceptable.
It's funny, too, because the hardest part is the rollover. Once it's in the account, that's just a couple of clicks and you've bought. You can buy an index fund for
Put it all in the broad market of the S&P or target date fund and don't even think about it for those 7 years. You're going to have a lot more money than your neighbor who has it sitting there at 0.1%.
That's crazy.
It is. That's why I thought it was kind of important. It's a good life lesson. And as I said, when you hear this number, it's a big one. This is the per year loss opportunity cost of these people not getting their money working for them.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting.
Definitely.
All right. Golly, have you heard of the term peak 65?
No.
Peak 65 is a representation of the baby boomer generation. It happens that 2024 is the year when more boomers will turn 65 than any other year. I'm a little early in the baby boomer picture, but there are several behind. They were born between 46 and 64. And of all these people, you can imagine a lot of them are worried about their retirement prospects. So a bunch of things are happening, and one of them is a lot of them are planning to work past age 70. And I admire those people because that's a very good answer to the potential problem of retirement income. The problem is that there are more types of job losses than just I'm retiring. So really just a small fraction of those people actually do work past 70, and that's kind of scary. So how many Employee Benefit Research Institute, whoever they are, not sure, but they seem reputable, they found that 64% of people in that age group felt good about their retirement prospects. Or as I always like to look at things, 36% didn't feel good about their retirement prospects. Now, what are you going to do about that if you're one of those and you're realizing that you're getting behind? Well, I think the place to start is you make a plan to get out of this, whether it's your credit card debt or your investing habits or skills or whatever. But I never in history can I see a time that was more necessary to find people like Adam and me, various other RIAs around the country who will not rip your face off with commissions, first off, but people who can counsel you if you are indeed concerned about that, because you're probably not going to be able to help some of these things. You know, companies close and you lose your job, and some of them just get obstinate and they fire you anyway. A lot of it is due to disability and illness, and you don't have control. So if you get to that age and you're not well on your way, this is bad. So finding a way to get out of debt and save more money, it all starts right there. And that usually requires a little outside hand holding to give you the push. You know, I've been reading a lot about getting credit card debt gone and all that. There's various theories to that. But everybody is pretty much in agreement with one thing. Americans have too much credit card debt. The unpaid balances are not as high as they used to be in some cases, but there are a lot of them. And this is going to hurt everybody until interest rates keep coming down. So if you're sitting in that 50, 55, 60-year-old chair and you're looking at my retirement date, my full retirement date might be up to 67, whatever, and I'm not going to make it. Well, I promise you one thing for sure. If you're not going to make it with what you know now, you're not going to make it, period. And that requires change. If something is unsustainable, it will stop. And if your rate of saving and growing is unsustainable because it's too low, then you'll have virtually nothing because you're losing it all to inflation year after year. So my advice to people is really start considering looking for a financial advisor if you're either at retirement or about to retire, but especially if you got a few years left. Because while you're still working and saving and investing, you've got a great opportunity to make that situation better so that when you do turn 65 or 6 or whatever your magic number is, you'll have a much better chance of success. Yeah. Just a little commercializing, I guess, for our business. You can always find us at VanLeeFinancial.com, and we will meet with anybody who cares to for an hour. You have no obligation whatsoever. Worst case, you come out of there with some good direction. If you're doing some things wrong or you need to do some things better, we'll tell you. And never know where that'll wind up.
Yeah. And if you do find yourself in that, if you are in that situation and you are looking for help, one of the things that we do that we don't really talk about it as much on the radio, but coming up with a financial plan, an actual detailed look at how you can get to that retirement point by saving and changing your spending habits and paying off debt. That is something that we work on with our clients. And it is it's something that not everyone who does what we do provides. It's a service that we provide and some of our peers do, but not everyone. So if that's something you're looking for, find us online.
Yep. The key, kind of the industry standard, I guess, now is that by setting yourself up for retirement, what they mean is you'll have a sufficient, sustainable income for 30 years or better. Because let's face it, if you're getting out at 65, 67, your chances of living past 87, 90, 92, they're getting better every year.
They are. Technology. Well, actually, not the last couple of years.
Well, but you have to do that milestone thing. If you die of an overdose, they've got to throw you out of the pool because the people who don't die are then indexed a little higher for their expected life. And it's a very tough thing to say you're going to live exactly this long. There's always some deaths due to war and car accidents and illnesses and all that. But assuming you're living a fairly normal and reasonable, healthy life, there's no reason at all that you could successfully plan for less than 30 years.
Yeah, we try and plan to about 100 these days just to be on the safe side.
Remembering the whole time that in the last few years of your life, you're going to really wind up spending some money.
Usually on healthcare.
Yep, and it's something that the society we live in cannot afford. You can talk about it, but we can't afford it. In fact, that's being talked about right now, and it's totally unrealistic. So I can only tell you so many times, but look for a fee-only planner with a CFP certification operating as a registered investment advisor, or RIA. That is your best guarantee that the people you find are honest. They won't be conflicting with you for the goals because they don't take commissions. It's a new life for some people. Another thing I've been reading lately is a really big majority of people with substantial assets think that they should use a huge firm, a Merrill Lynch type huge firm, rather than a small person because they want to be somebody. And I could probably point you to a few hundred people who think that's crazy.
Yeah, that's not the huge firms that will, they can, what do they do better? They can offer certain products that we can't offer. But honestly, most people don't need those products anyway.
Yeah.
Looks like we have a phone call, but we're right up against the break. So
please hold on, Mike, on the other end. We'll take you right after the break. The whole concept of size might feel comforting to some people, but to me, it means you're more likely to get caught in a kind of a gap, a forget gap. Do you have someone who you can call, and does that someone answer the phone every time? Do you want to be treated with the personal care that you can get from a small company like ours?
Yeah, and all of our clients' money is at Schwab, and Schwab is a huge company. It's very safe. I don't see a tremendous advantage over going with a big firm over someone like us.
No, I was just amazed at that percentage. It's really big, and it's our job to convince these people that they're wrong. All right, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
A quick replay of the trivia question, then we're going to go to the phones. 28% of people, this goes to 2015, it's probably, I don't know, might be different, might not right now, but who they rolled their 401k accounts to IRAs. They left their balances uninvested for 7 years on average. What was the collective cost to society of not having that money invested? Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
How's everything?
Oh, hanging in there,
Good, what's happening?
If I could, you guys have talked, especially you, Steve, many times about the dilemma of Social Security.
Yes.
And I read an article by a visiting fellow recently, a visiting fellow from the Hoover Institute, and he's also a chairperson at George Mason University, who wrote a very interesting article about Social Security, and this will come as no surprise. He talks about how if the politicians in Washington haven't been bickering for the last 20 to 30 years, we probably wouldn't be in the position we're in now.
That's 100% correct.
Absolutely.
Right. So one of the points he makes is that to fix Social Security with payroll taxes increases alone, the current rate would need to be increased immediately by 27% on every worker, not just the rich.
That doesn't seem feasible.
You're going to get a little backlash.
Yeah, a little bit.
Also, he said that by the time the trust funds are nearing depletion in the middle of the next decade, even total elimination of all new benefit claims wouldn't prevent insolvency.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know where they're going with this if you think about it. They want to get rid of the whole concept of a trust fund, and they've been trying for a long time to move Social Security into general revenues.
It's going to happen. I almost guarantee it.
Well, they made sure of it by doing nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because the alternative is that whatever party is in power when that happens will immediately be out of power. And if the only reason that people go to Washington is to stay in power. And they don't care about you. They don't care about me. They want to stay in power. And ruining Social Security would not go well for them.
Yeah, he makes the point that the myths that the accusations that the progressives make and the accusations that the conservatives make, they're all myths. They're all based on no facts. And I'll just bring it to the conclusion. He says that the only way this could be solved is if they act immediately, and they need to close the large and growing financial shortfall by moderating benefit growth, adjusting eligibility, ages, and bringing in additional tax revenue.
Yep. The first thing, Adam and I have talked about this for many years, the first thing I see him doing is taxing 100% of Social Security for everybody.
And what he means by that is right now if you make over, I can't remember the number.
$32,000 and $42,000 or something like
that. Right. And then on the flip side, I think that they will lift the cap on wages for Social Security tax. Right now if you make, I can't remember, it's like $130,000, $150,000 something.
Well, I think we're up around 190 now.
Is it that? No, I don't think it's that
188,
high.
I think.
Really? That high? Wow.
That
okay.
High. Well, look at the inflation. That compounds for inflation.
True.
One of these strange things the government likes to do is apply inflation to those numbers.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah. So what that would mean is if you make $300,000, you would get taxed on all $300,000 of it for Social Security taxes. So.
Yeah, they're trying to couch this in the Biden-esque proposal that says, okay, it's going to kick back in at $400,000 income and go in perpetuity. Then, of course, every year, the current rate gets a little higher, the $400,000 is statutory, it won't ever change. And one day you wake up and it's tax, Social Security taxes applied to everything, just like your Medicare is. Mm.
The problem with that right now is that Social Security is supposed to be like a pension where it's based on how much you put in is what you get out. Yep. And that would eliminate that portion of it. You would just be paying other people for their benefits.
It's going to be something like a UBI scheme at that point, universal basic income. Mm-hmm. So what's the use?
About the basic income. I was reading about that also, about the universal basic income.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fallacies with that also, but that's for another day.
It's failed every time it's tried.
Because of the bickering that goes on more now than ever and the divide in Washington, could we reach an insolvency point with Social Security by the middle of the next decade?
Yes, it will happen, right, because no one's going to fix it. I mean, you look at I saw Kamala this week accuse Donald Trump of wanting to take away Social Security and Medicare.
And that's exactly what they're
doing.
That's
what they do. They just accuse each other of wanting to mess with it, and therefore no one can actually mess with it in a good way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And for once, both sides are equally guilty.
Oh, 100%.
Trump is absolutely guilty.
No, he does it all the time.
Yeah.
They both do. This is not a partisan issue. It goes both ways.
And they all do it for the same reason as you were describing. Politically, it's a loser to say we're going to fix it, anything. So they all say we're not going to do it. So they have this circular firing squad going on. Meanwhile,
exactly.
All of us, you and I are still collecting now, but it's going to be the same for those who are already collecting as it's going to be for those who haven't started yet. Everybody's going to get a big old haircut in this thing unless they do something, and they have postponed doing something long enough.
Anything, correct. It's unbelievable.
Yep. It is about to turn into a moot point. At that point, they tap general funds.
Yeah, I don't see any other way to do it. I think it's just going to be funded by general revenue.
A lot of people don't know, but general funds have been used a lot in Social Security funding. First thing that they get is the withholding that we all pay out of our mandatory withholding from our paychecks. That goes into Social Security. The second thing is the taxation on Social Security benefits for those who have it half taxed or 85% taxed, that also goes in there. It's credited over. So if we go to 100%, then all of that will go in. That'll help a little. And those little things you hardly notice, but they're a drop in the bucket compared to what needs doing. But once in a while, like when they added this old age survivor benefit type, when they add benefits to this, the general fund reimburses Social Security for the actuarial cost of that making that change. So frequently over time, there have been large infusions of general revenues into the plan. And because that is acceptable, I guess, in D.C., I think it's going to be very easy to just put it in general revenues and say, fixed it, fix the Newell Post.
And I think that's why they continue to kick the can down the road.
Exactly. They know that the avenue of last resort is under their control. That's what I see coming. I don't know how to get around it.
Sure.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I guess the good thing about that is that you really – it makes me feel more confident that Social Security will not lower payouts, that it will be around, it's not going away. So, do I like the way they're solving it? Of course not.
No.
But do I feel like it will be there when I retire? Yes, I do.
Reagan did it very well back in 83, and it worked fine. They gave us, said, in 30 years, you're going to have to wait another couple of years.
But that's the thing. They should at least do that, even though it's way too late.
Absolutely.
They should start now raising the ages for the kids who are just born.
Yeah,
my kids don't care if they don't get benefits until 75.
No.
They're not even thinking about that.
Right. What they'd rather have is delayed benefits rather than having 25% of their paycheck taken out for Social Security.
Right.
And that's the alternative. So we can identify the problem. Quite frankly, I'm at a loss to fix it, given the political climate. So, I guess, again, this is more and more, take care of yourself. Pay number one. Pay yourself first. Save a lot of money. The best revenge in this world, I'm absolutely convinced, is making a lot of money.
Yeah, he concluded that unless they do something right now and do all the proposals, a little bit of everything, that we're going to be in pretty dire straits by the middle of the next decade. But
it's not like there's room in the general revenue budget to add something like that.
There isn't. We're
borrowing $1 trillion every 100 days, and they want to add another expense?
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, folks? It's crazy.
Absolutely.
Hey, I was going to take a quick shot at the trivia.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
Should I hold over?
No, go ahead.
Nope.
$172
billion? Yeah, you've been busy. This man knows how to work the internet.
Listen, I want to, in honor of my girlfriend, give it back to the two of you for a deserving person.
You've got it. How are you getting along?
Have a good weekend. Thank you very much.
You sound good, and I'm glad you called. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and it was an excellent topic to discuss. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, for those of you who didn't hear, Mike being a frequent caller, he'd lost his long-standing girlfriend on Memorial Day, as I recall. Not a lot of fun. No way to celebrate a holiday.
No, definitely not.
Although, Memorial Day, I guess you could probably, it's easy to remember, so much for the good news. Anyway, let's see. We only got a minute, don't we?
We have about 10 seconds.
All right, well, we had an interesting discussion in the office about used cars versus new cars, and I'm going to get into that right after the break. So we'll take a final break and be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. I was saying right before the break that we had an interesting discussion about purchasing cars in the office this week with a client. And Adam recently has been through the experience that has been around almost never in our lifetime until recently, where it's actually better. It's a better overall deal to buy new than used, because used cars went up so much because of the shortage of new cars, and supply and demand did what it did. Yeah. Well, the good news now is that used car prices are falling rather quickly. They're down 10.1% in the past year, including last month of 1.5% down. So don't assume that the used car market is not for you yet, but my advice would be wait just a little longer.
Some new car prices are falling too, especially in the EV market.
Yeah. So you gave me that statistic. I could hardly believe.
Yep. If you are looking for an EV and you previously thought they were unaffordable, you were right, because they used to cost $8,400 more than the average EV cost $8,400 more than the average gasoline powered car. Today, that number is $1,500. So that's just 1 year different. So now that's almost exactly the same as what your gas powered option costs. So if you want an EV, they're way more affordable now than they used to be.
I like the concept of choice based on other things besides money. When you are forced to make a decision because of money, you're not going to make the decision that gives you the most satisfaction. So if you want a little run around the town car that's EV, be my guest, and Elon will thank you very much next time you see him.
In fact, the Ford F-150 Lightning, which was the first all-electric truck introduced to the market, pretty good-looking truck.
It
it originally was higher in cost than its gas-powered cousin, but the now costs $5,000 less, according to J.D. Powers.
Yeah. And the factory that was being built in Canada to produce Lightnings is now producing F-150s with gas engines and hybrids.
Hybrids, yeah. Well, it's being retooled for that, yeah.
The concept of the hybrid, you can take this from someone who's had one for 14 years, is incredible.
I may be on the list for the new Super Duty hybrid. That is an appealing concept to me.
I could see it.
Yeah.
They've got power galore. A lot more miles per gallon.
Yeah.
My car is the same as one I had years ago, and that car would pass anything but a gas pump. I think it had about a 3-gallon tank and used that up pretty quickly.
Yep.
If you could get gas rarely anymore.
If you could get me a truck like that that didn't get 12 miles to the gallon, I would probably buy it.
Who knows? Maybe it'd be 2022, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be great. They have a there's a hybrid F-150 already, and it gets in the 20s, which is really good for a truck.
Yeah, good. And this is all about consumer preference now. That's what I was saying. I don't want you to be forced to do something because of money. It's very similar to the indexing of Social Security benefits. When they changed the method of putting the COLA on, because they know that if, I always use the steak thing, if steak's too expensive, you're going to buy hamburger. And then they call that the chain CPI. So they implement it. And what happens is, well, I do that. I buy hamburger instead of steak, but it's my choice. I don't want them forcing this lifestyle to go down just by using the wrong numbers. And that's very irritating. In fact, in the past 10 years or so, the purchasing power of Social Security benefits has, ready for this, it's lost 20%.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now, is that really a benefit? And I'm not sure. In fact, I should look this up. I'm not sure if that's after-tax effect or not. But if it isn't, it's even worse. Because, you know, you make more money, you pay more taxes. So if something goes up 5%, your benefit goes up 5%, you don't take home 5%. You take home 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So you're down one. And that's got to be handled somehow. It's crazy to have our standard of living continually drop just because we're old. A little follow-up on the good news on people exiting the workforce prior to what they really wanted to. 39% of those people, they leave by themselves because they said they could afford to retire earlier than expected. I think that's kind of nice.
That is good.
And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the performance of the stock market in the last few years.
23 was a really good year. 24 is shaping up to be a good year. 22 was a disaster of a year. 22
was forgettable at best.
I don't think I'll forget it, but it's not for good reasons.
All right, let's go more good news. Uber and Lyft in California. Y'all have heard us talk about it a lot. The state of California has been trying desperately to take away the independent status of people like Uber drivers and Lyft drivers. In other words, 1099 or gig workers. They're trying to force them into being employees, which would mean they'd be eligible for benefits, and the company could tell them what to do and when to do it and where to do it and all that stuff. And, of course, they've been fighting it because the perks of being an Uber or Lyft driver are that you work for yourself. And if you're good, you'll make money. And if you're diligent, you'll make money. But if you are going to work for a company that can then tell you, well, you have to go to an airport run and you have to do it in the middle of the day because we assigned you those hours and nobody's coming or going in the middle of the day, then you're going to lose the benefit of being a gig worker or side hustle type jobs.
It's so stupid.
The California Supreme Court just came through this week, and they said, no, you will remain 1099 employees.
I mean, this may be the first time that something sane has come out of the California Supreme Court.
And I have to agree with you. And guess who's at the heart of all of this? The ones that are pushing on the law the most. The SEIU, Service Employees International Union.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in state after state. And I think we have a precedent to go on now. So I'm hoping that this thing doesn't get anywhere all across the country.
For sure. It's just the dumbest thing. There's no valid reason for that to happen except that fits what those people like. They want everyone unionized. And that's the only reason that
they say they want everybody to be treated fairly with overtime and benefits and all that. That's not what they mean. You nailed it.
They don't want any of that.
Yeah, they want union dues.
Yeah.
Period.
Again, it's just like politicians. They say they're out doing stuff for you, but in reality, all they're doing is trying to stay in power.
Exactly right.
power and money.
I like passing on good news once in a while. It's nice.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I like it. All right. Why aren't you getting rich? Someone, I kind of liked this one. Just perusing through some Clark Howard stuff, I always give him credit where credit is due. Clark says there are six reasons you're not getting rich. Yeah, one of them, spending the majority or all of your paycheck. Duh. I think if that's happening, and it is happening, what percentage of Americans live paycheck to paycheck now?
I don't know, but it's most of them.
It's well over half, right? This one I like, too. Paying interest on debt. Credit card rates are astronomical these days, and they keep going up, up, up. And his line that I really liked was, nobody ever got rich paying 18% interest to Visa or MasterCard.
Nope.
That is the truth. Number three, and now is when it starts to hit home for us, obsessing over the stock market.
Oh, yeah.
I knew you'd like that. Yeah. How can we put this mildly? Don't do it. How's that?
What that means is, most people who, if you're able to save and you put some money in stocks, the best thing you can do is ignore it. But don't ignore it sitting in the money market.
Right. That's pretty bad.
But once you put it in the S&P 500, just don't look at it. Just because you will trade yourself out of any profits if you try to time the market. If you think you're smarter than the stock market, you're not. If you think you know something that other people don't know, you don't. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. There are methods of getting out of credit card debt, too, that we've talked about before. Snowballing for one and avalanching for the other. It just depends how you get started. But you have to overpay on something every month. If you are to the point where you can only pay the minimum on each of them, this is not going to work. But clever people can figure out how to go around that. There's always offers for free transfers with no interest for a while. Then you take what you would have been paying, you put it down on the principal, and do it that way. And you know, if you're watching the market and obsessing over it, you probably need a good financial advisor, too, someone to hold your hand a little bit, financially speaking. Number four, buying a new car. And we were just talking about that. In general, he's right. But there were some times recently when it was just a no-brainer to go new instead of used.
Yeah, but the cheapest solution is almost always to keep the car you have, not to go out and buy any cars, because cars are a depreciating asset that gets you nothing except from point A to point B.
Yes, so like a Boeing airplane, you just ride it until the wheels fall off.
Wait a second. It's just not... It's not a good thing to spend your money on. It doesn't build wealth. Buying a house builds wealth.
Yeah. Buying a car. And interestingly, point number six with Clark is buying more house than you need.
Well, that can be a costly endeavor as
I think that's kind of been happening in the post-COVID era when people are going to spend more time there, which might change the formula in that you really need that. But it's a good point. And the last one is neglecting to open a Roth IRA. And I couldn't agree with him more. If you got a little extra money and earned income to back it up, then open an IRA. For one thing, you want to get it open right away because there's a five-year window to reap the best benefits, total benefits, from your Roth IRA. Might as well be year one right now. All right. Well, this kind of shot right by, didn't it? We will have much more next week, same time. Please join us then and have a wonderful weekend. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Signing off.
AM 600 W.